So, you know, Mattress Mac here in Houston
yeah.
put a very large wager
biggest
on the Bengals.
Biggest wager ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the,
How's that make
on the
you
Bengals
feel?
To win. I'm stoked.
Call it now, because when this podcast comes out, Super Bowl will be over. So, yeah. What do you think? What is the final score?
Ooh, final score is tough. I think final score, I'm going to take Bengals 34-27.
There you go.
Over the Rams.
All right. You've heard it here first.
You've heard it here.
It happened yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, you've heard it here last. All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are you doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
There you go. And as of time of release, Pastor David is very excited or a little bummed out.
No, not time of release. Oh, yeah, okay.
It's yeah.
As of right now, I'm very excited, yeah.
Well, are you probably even more excited?
Yeah.
You know,
unless you're not.
I believe on Monday morning I will be very excited. I'm sticking by it.
For Valentine's Day or for a Bengals victory?
This is where he's like, what? What's Valentine's Day?
The Bengals victory will be the cause of my excitement.
Yeah, Valentine's Day coming up. The day it comes out. Got any big Valentine's plan? I mean, our listeners, obviously, their plan is to gather their special someone and listen to Beyond Sunday.
What else would you do? That's my plan.
Yes. Hold hands at a drive-in and just like, let's put on a little Beyond Sunday. And, you know.
Good Lord. Yeah. No, I do not. We do not have any big Valentine's Day plans, especially when, you know, Valentine's Day is on a Monday. It's like, what are you going to plan to do on a Monday? And the day before is the Super Bowl. So,
couple of sticks in the mud.
Yeah, we probably don't going to do anything either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh. You got big plans?
Yeah.
Well, calling us sticks in the mud.
Sort of. I don't know.
Sort of.
Isn't your husband out of town?
He gets back that morning, so he's going to be super jet lagged, and I'm going to probably drag him somewhere.
Nice.
I will be excited. I love Valentine's Day. I love friendship, love, and happiness, and authentic expressions thereof. I love celebrations. I love presents.
But can't you do those things all the other days?
You can, but nobody does.
Nobody has friendships on any other day?
I'm saying nobody like makes it a big thing.
Are you a Galentine's Day fan? Do you do the whole Galentine's Day?
Yes, but also like I'm married, so... I do Valentine's Day too, so it feels inauthentic to be like, I hate Valentine's Day. Let's do Galentine's Day.
I don't think
Day.
Valentine's Day is about hating Valentine's Day, is it? I thought Galentine's Day was just a celebration of the friendship between women.
Usually it's like we're salty about it.
Oh.
We could do a men one. We could do a Palentine's Day.
Yes. Palentine's. Because what we need is more places where men feel secure.
Finally.
Right. Let's celebrate men.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. We need more of that.
Yeah.
Oof. All right.
All right.
This got off to a weird start.
Yeah. Well,
how was it weird?
Probably better than others. So. I've got a Valentine's Day-y story.
All right.
Oh, good.
Yes. Love is in the air this season for Valentine's Day.
We're going to start singing Barry White.
No.
You can.
Nah, I'm good. I can't go that low. I don't have
Maybe
that
some Marvin Gaye, though.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Because it's not only love season, it's also mating season for some animals. Yes.
Sure.
They
plan
that well.
Yeah. Zoo hires Marvin Gaye impersonator to get monkeys in the mood for love.
Okay.
Yes.
Do monkeys share the same enjoyment of Marvin Gaye that some humans do?
Right.
Yeah.
Just because we're primates, we all like the same taste of music? That seems like a leap.
The Trinton Monkey Forest in Stafford, England hired Marvin Gaye impersonator David Largie to perform inside the Barbary Macaw habitat in order to get the endangered monkeys to breed. I can show you a photo here. These monkeys do not look super into it. And they're also not even near each other.
They're 6 feet apart.
The Marvin Gaye impersonator is definitely rocking.
I don't know. This one's kind of looking at the other. Like, what do you think?
Right. You feeling it? You feel the vibe?
I'm impressed.
You want to go get a drink or something? I don't know.
So at least in this picture, like he's like hanging out in a field with these monkeys. He's in there.
Right.
He's really committed.
He's singing. He's got a microphone.
Sure. One thing we know for sure, though.
He's not just like walking around looking like Marvin Gaye. That's not going to do it for the monkeys.
But he has a microphone, which means he's got like audio equipment and stuff for these monkeys.
One thing I know, though, for monkeys who are in mating season, you know, who are looking for some love.
Do you know anything?
You need some live music. You know? Put this a record stereo, not cutting
it. What we need is a third party to stare at us and sing. Yep.
The best part about, you know, being expected to mate in captivity.
Right.
Park director Matt Lovett said, "We thought it could be a creative way to encourage our females to show a little affection to the males that might not be so lucky in love."
All right. Listen.
So these are the deadbeat male monkeys.
Yes, we got some incel monkeys here. Right.
There's so many. We're just going to move on. There's too many things that
girls don't like me. They never go for the nice monkeys.
Yeah. Right. Nice monkeys finish last.
But then they listen to Marvin Gaye and suddenly it's all good.
You know, they're looking at those monkeys on the outskirts a little differently.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Females in season mate with several males, so paternity amongst our furry residents is never really known. So
that's different. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
So in birthing season in late spring, early summer will be the factor of did this work? You know, did did this make more monkeys than normal?
Cool. All right. Well, good luck.
Yes, and for parents out there, you're welcome for maybe having a conversation about birds and monkeys that you weren't really prepared for.
We'll put a content warning on this, maybe?
Nah. Too late. Too late.
It's fine.
Right, it's monkeys.
Does that make it better?
I don't know. I grew up watching Nat Geo, so.
Yeah, somehow they're like closer to being human, so it seems weirder than just like, I don't know, other animals.
I don't know if you've ever seen other animals mate, but that's way weirder.
Yeah. Well, I want to know how much your experience here in watching other animals.
Negative. We're cutting that conversation off right now. What's our topic today, Patrick?
Marvin Gaye this year. Is there a better option
than Marvin Gaye?
Barry White, you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, Barry White would be another good
option. Yeah, definitely, you know, some sultry bass. I think you want that. Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe like a John Legend situation for the modern monkey.
Sure. The modern monkey.
Yeah, they don't only need the classics.
Right. The every monkey, right? Right? Yeah.
Those are for your champagne monkeys.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
For your Cosmo monkeys, it's probably more of a Bruno Mars situation.
Mm, okay. Okay. I appreciate. I think you need to. This may be a future colleague for you of picking out the musical impersonator for the monkey exhibits at the
zoo. I'm like a matchmaker.
I think this is coming out on the social media feed of your other job here. I think this is going to be great.
The calm match. Maker with Elise McCartney. You can go in there and be like, who's on the down? What can we do to maybe like give him a little monkey makeover?
Yeah. This monkey needs some Adele. That's where that monkey's at.
Yeah. What are your best features as a monkey? We want to highlight, you know? So
the cheekbones.
All right. Yeah, there you go. That's a fun little Valentine's Day.
It's a Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's to
whether or not it's fun is to be determined.
Right.
To the macaw monkeys.
My Valentine's Day plans are not that fun.
I think it's macaw, right?
I think you're right on macaw. It's a weird spelling, but I think you're right on macaw.
It's macaque.
Macaque. Sure? I'm pretty sure it's pronounced macaw.
It's macaque.
We could Google it. Not going to.
We'll do it after the podcast.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got some relatively live stuff. What are we talking about? Breaking news
for us. As of a week
for us. Yeah, it'll come out a week. You know, 10 days afterwards. But hey, for us, this is
it's pretty tight.
We're really you know, getting the things right here. Going to talk about Stephen Colbert.
All right.
Are you familiar with Stephen Colbert?
I am a big fan of his early work and his modern work. Yeah.
Of Colbert, he's from South Carolina.
He is.
Cool. Brag. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From Charleston, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was definitely a major season in my life where I watched The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and The Colbert Report. That was kind of like where I'd get my news, from comedy shows. Like,
so do you remember when Colbert was on The Daily Show?
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. Like, and that was like Colbert, Steve Carell. Like, they had like some real heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Like, they're just like
new guys.
Relatively like nothings on The Daily Show.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Colbert used to do a God thing on The Daily. I don't remember what it was called, but he had like a whammy button and he would hit it and it would like talk about different religions. It was funny.
Yeah.
Stephen Colbert is a Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Self-proclaimed. Yeah, we're not putting that label on him. He identifies as such.
Sure. Also, I'm not
he's
here
out
to, like,
as a Catholic.
I'm not here to like take it away from you. Like, oh, he says he's a Catholic. Right. You know, like, but is he really?
Where's the fruit?
That's right.
On a recent episode of his podcast, he
TV show,
whatever, it doesn't matter.
All the same.
Different.
He was interviewed, which is
backwards.
He's usually the interviewer. Now he became the interviewee.
Yeah.
Yes. By Dua Lipa. Do you know who that is?
Only because we watched this clip earlier today.
Do you know Dua Lipa?
I do know Dua Lipa.
Yeah. Okay, can you tell us who Dua Lipa is? Because Patrick and I are not clear.
Yeah, she's a singer.
I knew she was
that.
Like a pop artist.
Okay,
like,
all right.
Yeah, I know.
Her dad is like real attractive.
Mr. Lipa,
yes.
Okay.
Mr. Lipa.
Fine. All right, you got it then as listeners.
Mr. Lipa. Yeah,
you imagine a pop artist with a very hot dad. There you go.
Marvin Gaye's child, right? There you go.
That'll narrow it down for some people. It will.
Miley?
What?
Billy Ray?
No.
All right. Keep rolling.
He had a season. I only know her because one of the girls I'm friends with on Facebook who I met in Peru, who was part of like the Peruvian youth group down there, is super into Dua Lipa. And so she constantly is posting stuff about her. So I'm like, I know she's a singer.
Yep.
Couldn't name a song.
Yep. I could now pick her out of a lineup because I watched her in this interview. So I could be like,
That's yeah, right. Probably in a week, maybe not. So right.
Like, for today, for the next couple of hours, yes, I got it.
So she asked Stephen Colbert basically like, how, what is the connection between his faith and comedy? Pretty good question there.
I love it.
It's legit.
Yeah. And Stephen Colbert gave a very, I think, a great answer, a really yeah. interesting answer, where he is going to talk about how, well, those connections, any standouts to his discussion. We both all listened to it. We've all maybe read it. Well, I find some highlights here in this article.
Yeah, and we'll link to the original interview, if we want to call it that. We'll link to that as well when we release this. I really appreciated his connections that he made between laughter and the ability to not allow death to have the final word.
Yeah,
particularly as a Christian, right, saying death is not have the final victory, and laughter is one way of establishing that. And using, you know, as long as you have humor and the ability to laugh, then death doesn't win. And
right.
It's when we give in to, what did he say? He said we allow evil to be that by which we try to overcome evil, as opposed to trying to overcome evil with joy and love and laughter. And I thought that was very powerful.
Yeah, for anything, not just death too.
Yeah.
Like anything.
I mean, the death was kind of the stand-in that he was using for the larger conversation.
Right.
I got to say that out loud. My hand gestures do not communicate on the podcast, right?
I mean, I think anything that we find like frightening or that makes us anxious and stuff, if you're able to sort of laugh at it, you take the power away from it.
So
he was kind of talking about things that are bad or hard or difficult. And he says, laughter keeps you from having fear of it. And fear of the thing is that keeps you fear is the thing that keeps you turning to evil devices to save you from the sadness. And then in a different section, if there's some relationship between my faith and my comedy, it's that no matter what happens, you are never defeated. You must understand and see this in the light of eternity and find some way to love and laugh with each other.
Yeah.
So I think in his conversation, you know, he definitely is going to highlight this idea of eternity, that we are eternal beings, and that laughter has the final say over death itself.
Yeah.
That does not end. That's not the end of the faith walk or of the journey.
Can I paraphrase that?
Sure.
I think it's helpful. Laughter itself is maybe not the thing that has the victory, but laughter is a symptom of that which gives us victory, as opposed to evil, which would be a symptom of that which gives us death, right?
Right.
And so I think that's just a helpful clarification. Like, I don't just think laughing is what gives us victory.
Yeah. Right. It's a tool, though.
It's a tool.
So real quick, I want to just talk a little about like kind of his comments. How do we feel this connection, faith and comedy? How do these things go together? And then we'll kind of talk about the backlash in some ways, or the support that Mr. Colbert has experienced from his comments.
Mr. Colbert sounds so formal.
It does.
I like it.
Our friend, Stephen Colbert.
Yes. Steve-o. Yeah.
Friend of the pod.
So I'll just say, I think that there are ancient roots for this idea of laughter and comedy. Mm-hmm. Patrick and I were looking up some stuff today on what is now called Holy Humor Sunday. It's the Sunday after Easter, but actually has very old roots of coming in the Sunday after Easter and playing jokes on one another, and practical jokes kind of as a form of laughing in the face of death, right? That Jesus has been raised and death has been tricked or pranked or whatever, and you know, God has conquered this, and so we laugh and joy and celebrate that. But then it's moved throughout, and laughter has become a huge motivation for people who are going through oppression and things like that. In fact, a former professor of mine wrote her doctoral work all tracing the use of laughter as a form of resistance during the Holocaust, and that was, you know, a way that people who were in concentration camps were able to maintain some of their own human dignity and connection with one another was through laughter, even in the midst of these atrocious situations, rather than giving into the evil that we don't want to become.
So I
think his comments are really spot on and very powerful.
Yeah, and it's funny because we really downplay the significance of laughter and comedy and joy too. It's, you know, I think somebody who is viewed as being very funny all the time, it can be like, well, you're not serious about anything. You're not able to be serious. And that is like a character failing.
Yep.
Versus, you know, this is, you know, my statement against the world is that I will find ways to laugh at this, or I will find ways to be joyful about this.
Which makes me feel like my defense mechanism to laugh in uncomfortable situations is maybe actually really...
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Yeah. This is actually a spiritual gift.
100% like patting us on the back for this right now.
I'm uncomfortable, so I'm going to laugh because I'm conquering death.
Right.
All right. That's
what we laugh so we don't cry.
So before I came to Lord of Life, I was a camp guy. I did a lot of stuff at camp.
You do stand up as well sometimes.
I have, I was an improv guy.
Let's not talk about Patrick's stand-up routine.
I love it.
we'll get into that later podcast. But I'm an improv guy. I did a year of maybe a year and a half of improv in downtown Houston at a little comedy show. But at camp, you know, we would always do skits, a lot of skits. Sometimes we'd come across, you know, some really powerful or hard like teachings in scripture. And we're like, how do we convey this to a group of students? Oftentimes we would do a skit and then a discussion afterwards. And oftentimes the skits I would write or plan around those things would have humorous tones to them. Mm-hmm. And for me, humor not only draws people in, it also, I always kind of thought like it is disarming. Yes. Like it takes away, you know, whatever shields they have up come down, because it has this effect of like, this is not only safe, it kind of, whatever, I'm on edge because talking about hard things can make me difficult or make me feel uncomfortable. But adding the flavor of humor to it allows those harder messages to like sneak in some ways, in a way that I don't think it could if you like just come some ways hot and heavy, like boom, here's this hard thinking, hard teaching, or hard idea. Like we need the humor to kind of like release tension and to do that. So I think having humor and comedy attached to faith is so important. If church is like the least fun space for you and your family, do you really want to go back? You know, like
Yeah, this isn't church specific, but that is, you know, historically the role of the jester in the king or queen's court, right? In the royal court, the jester was there because they could speak, and it's kind of the early onset of political satire, right? They could speak through jest and point to the foibles and the faults of the royalty in ways that other people could not.
Yeah.
But it was done in jest, and so they could get away with things and point out things that were really wrong with the leaders.
Yeah. So I'm somebody who writes comedy. I don't do stand up or anything like that, but I do write comedy.
Tell us a joke.
Right now.
Right. Cool. write down a joke right now. Right now.
Why do ducks have tail feathers? To cover their butt quacks.
All right. Did your daughter tell you this joke?
Yes.
That was solid. I liked it a lot.
Thank you. But you know, a few years ago I wrote a super angry novel about the corruption in the church, basically. And I really intentionally set it as a comedy.
Yeah.
Because these are really hard to digest things for people. And I could sit down, I could write an angry dissertation. Nobody would care about it. But if I can make you laugh about it, then you're still asking yourself those questions, but you want to read more about it and you want to ask yourself those questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's kind of like the brilliance of like satire and like it kind of like raises an issue through an unexpected and different way to kind of sneak in and kind of like say, oh, I never thought of things like this.
Right.
So I love comedy and humor, and I love laughing, especially laughing about the church. The church is very silly sometimes. So
there's a lot of material.
And oftentimes unintentionally so. It is trying to be incredibly serious, but sometimes its pants are down in a way. So like, you know, like, and you're like, and that's even more funny, right? Like, one more quote here that I wanted to get at is that from Colbert. I think ultimately all of us being mortal, the faith will win out in the end. But I certainly hope when I get to heaven, Jesus has a sense of humor.
Truth.
Yeah.
And I think he does.
Just look at the platypus. Come on.
Yeah.
You can't create something like that and not be willing to laugh.
Right.
Well, it's a ridiculous
I don't know. Maybe he takes it really seriously.
Oh, that could be.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lord.
Yeah. Whoops.
Yeah. Any other thoughts about faith and humor before we kind of get into the responses?
I'm pro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pro laughter.
I also think it's a really incredible tool to like punch up, you know, and sort of as a criticism or even to some extent an attack on systems of power.
I'm also going to recruit Elise to start writing some material for my sermons.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Give me some jokes.
Yeah. Butt quacks. There you go. Right.
Butt quacks is a good one. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Tell us more about punching up. I think we've mentioned that on the podcast before,
but just
to make sure, you know, we're on the same page. What does that mean?
So basically in comedy, you know, I just want to preface, I'm not a stand-up comedian. I'm a writer who sometimes writes things that are silly. But the idea is that if you are going to punch at somebody, you want to punch at somebody who holds more power, right?
So you punch up.
Right. So you don't punch towards somebody who's already on the ground, right? So we're not going to make jokes at the expense of people who are already on the fringes of society or who are already at a disadvantage, right? Mm-hmm. So we're not going to just rip on people in the LGBTQ community for no reason.
Right.
Yeah. We're going to rip on people who are making the laws that are keeping LGBTQ people on the fringes.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of good thing. Like sometimes if you're on the in crowd punching out, it can feel funny, mm-hmm. but the outside does not really feel that as funny.
Yeah.
Like,
no.
Like, and that's because you're feeling like you're being punching down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that definitely happens. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. people punch down for a to be comedic, and sometimes they even get laughs.
Right. Yeah.
But that usually comes like, well, we're all on the in crowd together.
Yep.
Right.
So we're allowed to do that. But it doesn't draw people into the in crowd,
right?
Because mm-hmm. That's not as fun. That's not as interesting, you know. So making fun of people who are hold power, like you mentioned, right. is just more fun. Like right. it draws people.
It's just better.
It is more fun, and it also draws people in.
Yeah.
Right.
Because we all experienced like people above us with power,
mm-hmm. right?
You know. So
yeah, I mean, I think it changes it too from like comedy for the sake of comedy. If you're like in the in crowd punching, you know, at the people who are also in the in crowd with you, whatever. But if you then use it to sort of be a criticism of something else, then that turns it into a tool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the office, making fun of the boss is more fun than making fun of the janitor. Like it just is that is mean spirited.
Yeah.
But the boss is like more playful and fun because that's the person who has power over everybody. So.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's what we do.
Right. You're Lord of Life. That's what we do. Wait, yeah. Hold on a second. That's not. Oh. Yeah.
That's you.
Sad face.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about this. The response to Mr. Colbert, Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
His thing.
Colbert,
his
name comma, Stephen.
His name is getting weirder and weirder.
Stevie Colbert.
Stevie C.
Yeah.
Yes. Tim Keller, who we've talked about in the past.
We have.
Yeah.
Pastor. New York City.
New York City pastor. Has cancer.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Author of The Prodigal God.
Mm-hmm. A lot of books.
And other books.
Yeah. He tweeted out the clip from the mm-hmm. the Late Show with Stephen Colbert saying, "This is a brilliant example of how to be a Christian in the public square. Notice the witness, but in a form the culture can handle. We should desire to have more Christians in these spaces and give them grace as they operate."
Mm.
Love it. So I think this is... like taking again beyond his comments themselves. Hey, these comments happened on a television show that's not for Christians.
Yeah, right. Nationally
not,
broadcast
and not made show, yeah. not like by Christians for Christians. It is a national show.
Not on what is it? TBN? Is that
the Trinity Broadcasting Network?
I think that's it. Is it TBN? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that weird. Like it's probably evangelist?
If you go to the TBN, I'm going to guarantee you, not going to be that funny. So
not going to have Stephen Colbert.
It might be for different reasons. Yes.
All the best.
Right.
Yeah.
700 Club. It's not that. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do we think about this? Okay. This is an example of how Christians operate in the public sphere. That's what Mr. Tim Keller is getting at.
Yeah. I mean, Mr. Keller, Tim, sir.
Timmy K.
Your Honor. I don't know. I don't know. I'm uncomfortable now. But he'll go on to reference this as well, talking about Paul and the way that we see Paul handle this throughout the Acts and his letters, you know, that he tailors his messages to the people that he's speaking to. Mm-hmm. You know, perhaps the most famous of this is when Paul's in the Areopagus, in Athens. Mm-hmm. And he talks about, hey, I see all these idols that you've got, and I see that you're very religious because you've got all these different idols, but you have one that's to the unknown God. Well, let me tell you about the unknown God, because it's the one that's actually more powerful than all the others. Right? And so he uses that which is already in the culture to speak to them about his belief and about his faith. And, you know, this is not the same as what Stephen Colbert was doing. But I think, you know, his point was not, hey, I need you to all believe everything that I believe first so that I can tell you about Jesus.
Right.
It's you already have these beliefs. So let me tell you how Jesus shapes those beliefs and transforms it into something new.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think anywhere else that's not particularly groundbreaking. Like tailoring your message to somebody and like listening to them is just good manners.
Right.
Like, but in Christianity, we're like, oh my gosh.
Good manners and good marketing. Right.
Right. Yeah. It's just, but for whatever reason.
It's not rocket science that car companies or, you know, laundry detergent companies or whatever figure out who their target audience is and tailor their messages to those people. Who do we want to buy our product? That's who we're going to market to.
Right.
What do those people like? If Christians want people to believe in Jesus, if Jesus is our product, so to speak, how do we speak to them in a way that matters to them and in a way that gets that, you know, shows them that this thing matters to their life?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll be honest. I mean, like, was Stephen Colbert's, I mean, he talks for like 2 minutes, you know, like yeah. it was it like, oh my gosh, I got to write some of this stuff down. No, maybe yeah. not. It was a very, very fine, very warm, very interesting statement. Yeah.
He didn't mention Jesus.
Well, he said the name.
He did say the name. That's true. Yeah.
He did not mention the cross. He did not mention an empty tomb. Right. He did not mention.
But there's so much sincerity there.
Yes.
You know, yeah. I think that's mm-hmm. the powerful piece of that.
Yeah. You can see he believes what right. he's talking yeah. about. And I think that's really powerful. But some people did take umbrage to not only what Stephen Colbert had to say, but also Tim Keller highlighting
word.
It.
This seems unsurprising. Yes. Why am I not surprised that somebody got angry about this?
Yeah. So some of the responses to Tim Keller's Twitter was...
Look, so the responses to Tim Keller responding to Stephen Colbert.
Highlighting Stephen Colbert. Okay. This mm-hmm. is what it could look like all in right, the public sphere.
Yep.
Christ was not presented. Faith barely mentioned. Repentance not existed. Christ's defeat of death through the resurrection is why we do not fear death. Not some nebulous sense of laughter. The gospel was not presented. And the faith was not represented. Some people were really mad at Stephen Colbert because he is a very large critic of Donald Trump during his presidency. He was also... president. That's kind of who they talk about.
Like, right.
That's called punching up.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Who holds all the power? That's who late shows make fun of.
Right.
Yeah. And so they were kind of mad at this. And, you know, precisely what faith did he articulate? What I didn't hear was anything remotely associated with authentic Christianity.
Hmm.
And also Catholicism is an enemy to Christ. So, you know, boom.
Catholicism is an enemy to Christ? Look, I'm not a fan of the Catholic Church, but come on, that seems extreme. That's
Yeah, I know. Christians, we're good.
Very silly.
We're the worst. We really
Super
are.
Super silly.
Man.
Yeah, you know.
Oof.
If we were anywhere else, maybe the dominant religion of the day would be, we'd think pretty negative of sometimes, but...
probably, but still.
Is what it is.
Yeah. Right now.
We're here.
Right
this
now, we're
we
the
are.
Worst. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So... Tim Keller responded to these things,
mm-hmm.
and I think I love his response.
Okay, what did he say?
So first, they remind me there are a couple habits on Twitter we should reject, and uh-huh. I think these are good habits, and we're not going to really get into these, because I think there are, if you want to talk about them. One, if you cite Person X at all, you must answer for everything Person X ever did or said.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that true or false?
That's something we reject.
Okay,
we should not
reject
that.
Right.
So just because I cited Stephen Colbert on this thing doesn't mean I have to accept everything Stephen Colbert
right.
has ever
sure.
done. Got
right.
it. Okay.
Or we have the name of Lutheran in our church body. That doesn't mean everything Martin Luther said we
right.
agree with
right.
and are constantly having to like defend and engage with constantly.
Right.
We can say he was wrong on those things.
Yep.
Right. Well, no person is ever going to be somebody that you can,
yeah.
you know, accept every single thing they ever did or said.
Jesus.
So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got one.
Right. That was a beautiful Sunday school answer.
Thank you.
And two, I can attribute opinions to you that you would not own. So I can say, this is what you think mm-hmm. based on like a few mm-hmm. sentences, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which yep. I think is also like,
we can do better, Twittersphere.
We can do better. And I think I really liked what...
it's not true. The Twittersphere can't
Tim Keller's original comment was, we should lift up these examples with grace. And yep. that means like not... You're not always going to say the best possible thing in this 2 minute talk. So having a grace filled approach of like, that was really great. There's other yeah. things about Christianity, but that was still good. Like that
yeah.
was still
yeah.
moves the needle.
I sort of take offense to the idea that that needs any grace at all. I mean, that's the sincere answer. About
I don't think his point is that what Stephen needs is grace or not. I think mm-hmm. his point is that when we're having those dialogues in a public sphere, we should enter into that with grace.
Yeah.
That we should be willing to offer people who are willing to have that conversation mm-hmm. grace based on whether or not Stephen needed grace for his comment. I think that rather than coming at it saying, well, we got this wrong, that should not be our first response. Our first
Absolutely.
Response should be,
I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. This is our one of graciousness,
right.
perhaps,
right.
rather than grace itself. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he goes on a pretty long little Twitter understanding. About this is why I support this. This is mm-hmm. why I think this mm-hmm. matters. He kind of says, the comments on my Twitter that have shown me Americans have a long way to go to understanding Colossians 4, 5 to 6 and how to be wise in the ways we act towards outsiders.
Ooh.
He dropped a Bible reference.
Yes.
Dang
and
he said, it.
This is called, and we've kind of discussed this a little bit, mm-hmm. contextualization.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. It's adapting your message to be understanding, compelling to particular hearers without compromising the truth in any way.
Yeah.
And he says, why contextualize? Because we're already doing it.
Yep.
As soon as we choose a language to speak, You're having contextualized mm-hmm. your message. Mm-hmm. You're choosing to speak to English listeners. Our podcast has contextualization on that alone, that it's in English.
Yep.
Right.
And if it was any other language, it would be contextualized in that language.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. As you, you choose vocabulary, illustration, mm-hmm. arguments, you're adapting to some human hearts over others.
Even translation of scripture.
For sure. All those things are things we, and things we already do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, so if you don't become conscious of how you are using contextualization, which is inevitable, you won't contextualize well.
Yeah.
And I think that this matters. And then you mentioned the Apostle Paul.
It is.
Does this.
Multiple times.
Yeah. And we can see in the book of Acts, he sometimes speaks to very different groups. Sometimes mm-hmm. a group of Jewish audience.
Yep.
Sometimes a group of believing audience. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a group of non-believing audience. And he speaks to them differently.
Yeah.
I think that mm-hmm. matters because he understands my audience helps. How I want to reach this audience changes based on who they are.
Yeah. This is maybe just tangentially related, but I think this is one of the great struggles that the modern Lutheran church has, is that we have gotten so used to speaking to people who already understand Lutheranism for mm-hmm. so long that we don't know how to speak to people who don't hold all yeah. this stuff already. We don't know how to contextualize Lutheranism for outside
That's Lutherans. True. As That's a former starter. Non-Lutheran.
Yep. We struggle with it.
Yeah.
Myself included. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we just always assume everyone grew up in the
yeah.
the same Sunday school class I did.
You know? Even when I say something like, oh, well, and then, you know, this gift of grace, right? When I say grace without any contextualization, there's so many, are people thinking about a prayer? Are people thinking about their aunt named Grace? Like, what are people thinking about when I say that? Mm-hmm. If you grew up Lutheran, you're like, oh, right, Grace, got it. And you're tracking with me. But that's even the kind of subconscious contextualization that we're doing mm-hmm. all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk about how do we, as Christians, kind of go into the public sphere, contextualize our faith well? Mm-hmm. What would we do?
Be careful.
What does that mean?
I mean, I think you need to be aware that you're doing it, right? Mm-hmm. In the same way that, like, okay, I see this this thing that's out in front of me. Let's say firewalking. Why not? Firewalking sounds like fun. We're gonna do firewalking, right? And so I see this thing that I know is dangerous. I know there's the possibility of getting hurt in the process, but I'm going to step out in faith and trust the process, and I'm going to tread carefully because it's actually more dangerous to run across the coals recklessly than it is to walk carefully across the coals. And so we're going to walk carefully through. Am I writing this right off the rails?
I'm just waiting for the Office episode reference.
It does happen on The Office.
It's, yeah. It's playing in the back of my head. Yeah. I just don't know how to verbalize right. it for our yeah. listeners.
We'll yeah. get there. We'll yeah. work on it.
Yeah.
So, and, I mean, tread carefully, but, you know, take the steps and
And by using that analogy, that's an example of contextualization.
Yeah. Look like, at me. Look at me right. go.
You're
yeah.
using an analogy to bring into this discussion.
Yeah. Right.
So
I also think that people can tell when you're using somebody else's words and not your own. And mm-hmm. like insincerity, mm-hmm. I think, will kill a conversation
sure.
faster
sure.
than most other things. Except yeah. maybe like punching somebody in the face. But
unless yeah. it's up.
Unless you're punching up.
If he's taller than you, right. all good.
Yeah. Is that what that meant? Is that
yeah. a lot shorter than yeah. you? No way.
Right. Okay.
Equal height, 50-50. You know? Right. Can go either way.
Excuse me. How tall are you? Okay. Thank you.
Let's go back to back real quick. Take off your shoes.
No. Put your shoes back on. That's, let me take off my shoes. That's
Yeah, I think that this matters. I think one of the things that we can get in trouble in through different sections of Christianity is if sometimes more fundamentalist crowd of yeah. Christianity like holds on to the truth of the message and like is unwilling to in any way, in some ways, bend it for yeah. for the sake of contextualization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can lead to like you're just talking past me or you sound like a guy with a megaphone while I'm trying to like order a bagel somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like it does not sound appealing at all.
How often do you order a bagel with a megaphone?
Well, they have the megaphone and I'm just living my life.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'm not ordering a bagel.
Like a street corner preacher.
Like a street corner preacher, yeah.
Got it.
And then sometimes I think in progressive Christianity, we can contextualize so much mm-hmm. that we almost like lose the truth of our message sure. for fear of like doing anything that could be offensive
right.
or that our audience might be turned off. So we always are kind of like, let's just talk about the safer aspects of faith in the public sphere. Like everybody's fine with this idea we should love one another. But then the idea of like your a sinner in need of redemption, that's scary.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to like shy away from that a little bit and kind of like, let's not talk about that, even in helping its sexualization.
Yeah.
So I think both those things can happen in these cases. And those things happen poorly. So how do you, you know, and what's interesting here, you know, we from the church side, honestly, I can go like the majority of my week and the only people I talk to are Christians.
Yeah.
Like that's it. I mean, maybe like the guy at McDonald's when I'm ordering my Land Air and Sea Burger, you know, like, and I don't know if he's a Christian. I'm like, hey, by the way, do you believe in Jesus?
Before I order this, I need to know.
But like any person I have like any kind of real conversation with believes in Jesus.
Sure.
Or at least like, I assume, you know, so it's sometimes hardest for church workers to enter this field because we never have to like encounter people really who maybe feel differently.
Yeah.
And how to like, how do I sit at the lunch table in the office or have a conversation with my coworkers when I know they do not believe the same things I do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is fun. I mean, you've probably experienced this as a dad now as well, like meeting other parents and having the conversation. That's the standard intro, right? Like, oh, where are you from? What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as soon as you're a pastor comes up outside of the context of you work in a church, there's either two reactions. Either they're going to start telling you about their church and why their church is great, or they're going to stop the conversation and try to get away from you pretty much as quickly as they came. Like, okay, great. See ya. Yeah. I'm going to go talk to this other parent over there. Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't think that's just me. I don't know. Maybe I should maybe I should rethink that too. But I think that's a piece of that contextualization, right?
Yeah.
Is that how do we give ourselves space to have those conversations with people who are maybe really uncomfortable speaking to people who want to have those conversations? Because I think there are all sorts of contextual assumptions about, you know, who a pastor is and what a pastor is going to do too. And I tend to think that I don't fit most of those molds, but a lot of people aren't really interested in finding out.
Yeah. So I end up having a good many conversations with people that are not Christians just because of, I guess, like my friend circle and stuff happens to be pretty diverse, which I've talked about before.
And you don't spend all day working down the office.
I don't work in a church, so there's that.
All of your coworkers are not also
Sure. So I guess like two things that I've taken away from that experience are don't be afraid to believe what you believe and don't be afraid to not know what you don't know. Like it's okay to not have a whole bunch of answers for somebody who's curious. Like ultimately you're not the source for that and you're not going to be like the hinge point for their faith.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. And so as we show grace to others in the public sphere, as they talk about their faith, show it to yourself.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, and say like, you know, maybe I could have handled that conversation a little differently looking back, but it's okay to show yourself a little grace and say, God is working in beautiful, in majestic ways, even when I fumble my words and even when I'm not quite sure how to answer a tough question in this space.
Yeah. Probably even more when you fumble your words, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sincerity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. In my year and a half of improv, I did have a couple conversations with people I did who it was definitely not a Christian improv place. And you know, some interesting things came of that. And I got a chance to share, this is who I am, this is what I believe, and also let's get on stage, let's be funny, and sometimes go a little blue in our language and our comedy. Sure. So like, and do those things together.
Did you make sure that your character prayed in all of your skits? Was that your witness?
I was always trying to baptize them visually. My character always wanted to baptize all the other characters. That was kind of it, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it's like in The Office when Michael Scott has a gun.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the most exciting thing you can have?
Right.
A gun.
I have a cup of water. Right. Just kidding, you know? So, yeah. One guy did tell me I was pretty funny for a man of the cloth. So
like, man of the cloth.
Not bad. Yeah.
Like, all right, that's not too bad. I'll take it. Yeah. You know? I'll put that on my resume.
You're not a man of the cloth, but
you know. I'll take it.
What does it even mean? I mean,
What does it mean?
What cloth? Yeah. Of what cloth am I a man of? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this all is good stuff there.
Thanks.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
I mean, I got thoughts, but I think we're just talking about this. I'm good. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I think
no, I feel good. Pretty good about it.
I am pro Stephen Colbert, and I'm pro Mr. Keller's response to Mr. Colbert.
Yeah. And I'm
pro comedy.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think you're anti-contextualization in the public sphere. You're either saying one of two things. Either one, we are just not going to enter the public sphere at all.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're only going to talk to people who already believe the same things we do.
Mm-hmm.
Or two, you have to kind of accept like every interaction you have that you do not mention Jesus in, you're failing. I mean, you're failing your own standard that you're holding other people to. So unless like every time somebody's like, how you doing? Pretty good. Jesus died and rose for me today. So I'll take a number five. You know, like unless you're doing that all the time, you are. And by the way, nobody wants that.
Right?
Yeah.
That's not helpful to the cause. Like, it's unfair of you to say like Stephen Colbert did not use that time to talk about Jesus' death and resurrection when I don't say it every time.
Yeah.
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 All right. Anything else on Mr. Colbert?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, hey, if you liked this episode or any of our other conversations, you can find us all at beyondsundaypodcast.com. Be sure to like, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast listening source, and send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. Tell us about a time when you have perhaps contextualized your faith, or if you know Stephen Colbert and could get him on the podcast, we would love that too. So send us an email and we'll
swing for the fences.
Yeah. Or Tim Keller. I'd take him too. Either one.
Okay. I looked it up here. I'm going to see how we pronounce this.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Ha!
I was not even close.
Vindicated.
All right.
It's all those Nat Geo hours.
All the hours of Nat Geo. Yeah. Okay, you can stop saying it. Yeah, I got it. I was wrong. I already admitted that I was wrong. Thank you. Yeah.
I said it wrong first, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
But I'm giving myself a little grace. So
that's good. That's good of you.
All right, thanks for listening, buddy. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.